Here we go.
Get ready, get set for the best movie and pop culture talk in the universe. It's the Good Brothers on Mercado Airwaves with your hosts, Alex Mercado and Mike Mercado.
Welcome back to another episode of the Good Brothers. I'm Alex. That's Mike. We are the Good Brothers, the best brothers, only podcast in the Midwest, in the Chicagoland area. We are your middlemen between LA and New York. Mike, say hi to the folks.
Hi, folks. I like that. The middleman between New York and LA. Good brother, how
like
are you
that,
doing?
Huh?
Yeah, it's pretty good. How are you doing on this Friday? Breaking fourth wall. You are seeing the magic here in Oz. We are recording this late on a Friday night. It has been a busy week for your boy over here. So we wanted, though, to talk to the great fans of the Good Brothers here on Mercado Airwaves. So how have you been this past week?
I'm good, but I think you've been better. Congrats to our own CEO, founder, COO, Triple H himself, Mike, getting a promotion at the radio station. That's great, and that always helps our future endeavors. So congrats to you, Michael.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, and we are in the middle of a very busy season here in the United States as we get ready for the election. And obviously my job being at a news station has definitely taken a big uptick in busyness over the last few days. But I'm excited and thankful. And I'm thankful to be here tonight to just talk a couple things. We're not going to have a really beefy episode, even though there's a lot of stuff we have to get into, good brother.
There was a lot of news this week. Yeah,
absolutely. And I wanted just to get on top of this and talk about a couple things, and then we will definitely hanker down on these a little bit more on next week's edition. So we'll go ahead and jump right into it, good brother. We'll do the biggest news I think that a lot of people are excited about. The first one, this comes from us, from the Hollywood Reporter, Jared Leto to play Joker in Zack Snyder's Justice League. This is a interesting development that came over the last few days. Jared Leto, the classic DC villain in The Joker 2016's rendition in Suicide Squad, has joined the shooting of additional footage for the Snyder Cut, filmmaker's definitive version of the 2017 superhero movie he was forced to exit and never saw through completion, multiple sources tell The Hollywood Reporter. Good brother, that is one of the first news. And we got this from Collider, exclusive, Zack Snyder, Justice League reshoots ad, Joe Manganiello's Deathstroke. I always mess up his name, but everybody knows Joe. He is one of the dopest dudes in Hollywood, one of the cool nerds in Hollywood, and it is now talking to Beck as Deathstroke, something that everybody was excited to see him and Ben Affleck go at it. When you hear this news, the excitement of Zack Snyder's Justice League, how much HBO and Warner Brothers are putting behind it, what is your brain going to?
I'm fascinated because this is turning into more than just a cut. I think the term we use when we use cuts is more, okay, it's the same footage you already filmed, but we're going to move a few things and maybe we'll add a deleted scene. But this is very unheard of to see so many actors coming in that not only are doing reshoots, we're bringing in characters that weren't in the film at all or weren't planned to be. So whatever we're going through right now with Zack Snyder is the first of its kind. It's very exciting. It's great to see DC make these moves of just, why not go big? You already know this is going to be on a streaming platform. Why not go big? Like, we already talked about it last week with Disney that we can see the next year is going to be dominated by the streaming wars. So why not put a lot more money into this when you know this will drive out subscribers?
Yeah, and I'm really interested to see how this all goes together. We do know that it's going to be this long movie, so I think that leans into why they're doing this. I you know, it's interesting because in the video game world, we see a lot of remakes and re-editions and just a lot of different ways to come out with the same video game. And I think a great example of this is like the Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 3 remakes, in which they're not just reporting the old game and just updating the graphics. They completely built a new engine. They built a new way of playing the game. And I think that's kind of the same thing that's happening in this scenario where they're taking a movie that he didn't quite finish and they're making it this new adventure. Whether it makes it better or not, I don't know. But it's going to be different than what we saw when we went to the movie theater.
Exactly. That's what makes it. That's a great example you used with Resident Evil where the newer recut remake versions, whatever you want to call them, are the better versions. Like, those are the versions that relaunched Resident Evil to a new film franchise, a new animated franchise, and new video games. So that's a great example. I'm with you. This is very unheard of. And who knows where this can lead when it comes to redoing certain films that, you know, if this is successful, what's stopping Fantastic Four from doing this or Doctor Strange or other movies that were, you know, in production hell or weren't received very well. And we hear about these other cuts like Suicide Squad. Is this going to lead to a new genre in general, you think? Or is this just, you know, it's a crazy year. Let's steer into it.
I think a lot of it is just X factors that we have to take into account. But also it's the investment on some of these companies. Like, how much investment is somebody like a Universal going to do for, you know, what they would do for Fast and the Furious compared to, like, a little more unknown property, you know? Like, we're talking about Time Warner. We're talking about Disney. But Disney hasn't even done this yet. So, I don't know. I don't think this is going to be a trend. You know, everybody was wondering what George Lucas did this when he was re-editing his old versions of Star Wars, that was Stanley Kubrick going to do this? Was Martin Scorsese going to do this? Was Quentin Tarantino? And nobody really did it besides him. So, I think we're just getting the definitive edition. They wanted to make this investment. They want to be part of these streaming wars as much as anybody else. We see what happened with Quibi, so we know that it's a dog-eat-dog world. So I think it's just times and circumstance, in my opinion.
Hey, our show outlived Quibi. Look at us.
We did something right in this world, good brother. And you know what? There's one thing that is going right. Speaking of the DC Universe, Batman has been filming in Chicago. You know, not much crazy news that we want to talk about, but I think it's always a great sign. Chicago, whenever it is a setting of a Batman movie, typically speaking, that Batman movie does pretty well.
I mean, you know how we are in Chicago. We're going to own the hell out of it. The only good Transformers was the one filmed in Chicago. Any film filmed in Chicago is an automatic classic. And yet, yeah, The Dark Knight did pretty damn well. Dark Knight Rises wanted to go to Pittsburgh and blew it. So I'm sure this movie is going to be great. I'm with you. It's always a fun thing to know, like, hey, I live in Gotham, technically. Like, that's pretty cool.
Talk to me about Borat, good brother. We are moving on from the comic book world, and we're going into a world that just seems to be comedic, seems to almost be part of satiric comedy when it comes to what you would see in a graphic novel or a comic book. But good brother, it is our real world. It is the Borat sequel that came out on Amazon. The hype is real. It's gotten a certified Rotten Tomato score. So what is the zeitgeist right now? Do you think it's going to hit as much as the original one, or is that impossible just because it came out of nowhere when that movie came out compared to this one where kind of the shtick is gone? Now it's more about how will people respond to it?
It's interesting because I did watch the film last night when it released. I enjoyed it. It's not as good as the first one. A lot of the stick doesn't hold up anymore. I found it funny. I like that kind of humor. Like, I like that Eric Andre style. I think that's its detriment, though, is we have so many maybe even better versions of Borat modern that are a little more less cringe and more funny. And I think parts of it don't age well. It does do a good job talking politics. I would say I don't think it's going to break any records. I don't think it's like Seth Rogen said, it's the funniest movie he's seen. Obviously, he's a producer on it, and he used to write for the Ali G show. So he's kind of biased when it comes to it. He probably finds that very hilarious. I don't think it sticks around as much. The country wasn't as divided back then. So I don't see a lot of, you know, Republican or Trump supporters really loving this film. And I don't really see a lot of, you know, families loving this film. Like, I just don't see this film hitting the same way Borat did. Borat was so special and random at the time, and it was the first of its kind that everyone was into it. Even if you didn't like it, you knew about it. You were into it. This one I can see going over people's head. I can see it, people complaining that it's too political, and maybe that humor is just not warranted this day. But I think it's worth the watch. If you like the first Borat, you'll like this one. I don't think you'll like it as much, though.
What do you think about the Rudy Giuliani? Because say what you will, whether it was better than Borat or whatnot, it did have a scene, obviously, that now has hit the pop culture. It's not, it seems to not be as quotable. I haven't heard a lot of quotes from the movie. I have yet to see it. It has only been out for 24 hours, so there's going to be a time period of that. But in today's day and age where social media would have things of hashtags and whatnot, the only thing that has really hit the zeitgeist in that sense, the same way the first one did, is the Rudy Giuliani thing. So with that in mind, do you think that, what do you think about that scene and kind of how it's hit the mainstream and kind of society right now?
So I think Sacha Baron Cohen said it best, and I'm on a huge kick with him because he's been my, you know, my
Thursday night release. We'll talk about the other one he did. We'll talk about what Sacha Baron Cohen is.
I think he's amazing. I think he's going to win an Oscar. He said it best when he said, can you imagine what he did when he did it? When, like, when there wasn't people texting him, when there wasn't producers around. Like, can you imagine when there wasn't a camera crew, what this man must have done? And I think that's so simple yet so scary to think about, of like, this is how ballsy he was to do a kind of move like this when he knew people were, like, at least listening, at least around. Imagine what he did when they weren't around. I think that's the best way to approach it, where it's like, it's almost scary. But again, you and me are very much like, I have to laugh at these moments of like, man, like, this is the world we live in. We're like, now we have a pictures and video of this kind of like creepiness that we all know about. It's very eerie to see it on TV.
I can see, at the very least, without watching the film yet, I will watch it at some point before we record the next show, is it is not an embarrassment, it is not a letdown, and it is not a detriment to the original. It is it seems to be a nice addition to the series from what the general populace is saying who have seen it. So at the very least, there is this idea that it is a worthy sequel, which is nice in today's day and age to get something like that when we were never expecting a sequel. How could you expect a sequel of Borat? And he did it, and we got to give him credit for it. So I'm excited to see this movie. I think one of the reasons why a lot of people have enjoyed it is because they're not expecting Borat to be at the same level it was with the original. So it does kind of have that going forward, I believe. But we got to give Sacha Baron Cohen, that entire staff, credit for pulling this off, and I think for also giving something for what it seems that a lot of people are accepting in the lineage.
I agree, and he's such a good actor that even if you don't love the movie, you can, it's a good film. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to say it's a good film. How do I say this? You know, when there's a badly directed film, you know, movie, you can see it. You can see a bad movie. It's not a bad movie. Even if you hate the material in it, it's filmed well, it's edited well, it's directed well. It is what it is. So for an actor like him to do something like this, when he wants to do projects like this, let them. And, like, support them in that. Because the more they do projects like this, the more we do get Trial of the Chicago 7 then.
And let's talk a little bit about that. He crushes it in that movie. You were gushing about it. We are getting closer and closer to Oscar season, or what would be normally Oscar season. Go ahead and give us a little bit of a review. You'll gush about it a little bit more when you're in studio, so we have some proper time to do it. But today's, you know, just tell us what you thought about that movie. And now, coming off of Borat, what you thought about Sacha Baron Cohen's portrayal in it and kind of the whole story of the Trial of the Chicago 7.
The cast is superior. That's the best part of the film. Mark Rylance, Eddie Redmayne, Sacha Baron Cohen, Yahya Abdul. Just everyone in the movie was fantastic. Like, that casting, the director should get an Oscar, honestly. I think it's my favorite film of the year as of now. It just beats out The Five Bloods. I think Sacha Baron Cohen should get a Best Supporting Actor nominee and win as of now, from what I've seen. I can't recommend it enough. On a year where you're not able to go to movie theaters and you still are getting new releases, enjoy these new releases at home. And for those Oscar, you know, pundits, this is great. Like, so for people like you and me, we're still getting those Oscar movies. And to me, this was the number two one I've been looking forward to, and it delivered.
What would you say is the elevator pitch for somebody who's not familiar with this story, who wants to see this movie because of the hype of Sacha Baron Cohen, and when people are saying it might be an Oscar contender? What would be the elevator pitch to just the common folk?
I think you got to pitch the cast, because the cast really does sell itself. The fact that it does take place in Chicago, Illinois, again, biased us, but not a lot of bad movies come out of Chicago, if I do say so myself. And the whole, it's relevant more now than ever, especially when we're talking about minimum in this country. Protests are happening, and everyone wants to dictate, well, what's a proper protest? What's not a proper protest? What is involving crossing state lines to protest another state's issues? This movie tackles the original case of that. and gives you a little hindsight of where we are now compared to where we were 40 plus years ago. And maybe we haven't come in that far as we think we have.
Grade the two movies, good brother.
Let's see. Borat, I'll give a nice 7.5. It doesn't strike the way it does, but I, like I said, you said it really nicely. You haven't seen any quotes jump out or pictures beside the drama. That kind of speaks for it. You know, My Wife was the biggest thing in the world and still is to this day. You can quote the original Borat and people know you're talking about Borat. That character is in the zeitgeist. He is in pop culture. So a nice 7.5. Trial, I give a nice 9.5. I wish we could have done a little bit more with Yaya, and I wanted it to be a little longer, but it's a fantastic movie and my favorite of the year.
Good, brother. Before you and I step into hell, you got anything else you want to talk about? Mandalorian coming out very, very soon. We will talk all about that. Super hyped about that. And obviously some news dropping about some streaming shows. We talked a little bit about Resident Evil, but anything else you want to talk about on this truncated episode of The Good Brothers?
No, you know, go out and vote. And when it comes, like, well, we can give it a lot of little new little stories came out. Nothing too big. We kind of covered the Justice League and the reviews of the movies. That's about it. Yeah, let's get to some wrestling.
Let's do it. So the good brother and I have a personal matchup in fantasy football. We will be settling our score in Hell in a Cell. And so will the WWE superstars. And we will start off with, as we said, we're recording this. It is currently 9:45 in the greatest city in the world in Chicago, IL. And we are about to make our predictions. This is what's been official. So SmackDown has ended. We will start off with Otis taking on The Miz, and the winner will have the Money in the Bank contract.
Man, that one's tough because I was keeping up with, while I was at work. I was kind of peeking in on Twitter and was having a wrestling. That one's tough because I can see you already broke up Heavy Machinery. So it doesn't make much sense to not keep Otis with the briefcase. The Miz is a way better person to have it storyline-wise, heel-wise, and it's The Miz. But again, I don't think it makes much sense. If it was Morrison, I'd be a little more into it, I think. But I'm going to say Otis retains.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Otis, too. This really hasn't caught my attention. I think a lot of it, too, is there's no way Otis is beating any of the guys who have the title right now. So I think that's why it feels a little weird. When there's certain guys who are champion and certain guys who have the briefcase, you're like, oh, there is a little bit of a chance that somebody could cash it in. But right now, there is no way. If Randy Orton can't pin Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns is looking to fight The Rock at WrestleMania, Otis or The Miz aren't cashing in on him.
Here's your out, though, and I think they did it really well when Carmella had cashed in with Charlotte Flair, and Charlotte went on that tear, and you could say she was the Roman Reigns female. And they did a great job. It was the night after WrestleMania when they brought in new people. They jumped her, and then someone came in, hit one move, and pinned them. I could see it being one of those situations eventually down the road, whether it's McIntyre or Reigns, where, you know, someone – their next storyline that doesn't involve the title but still the main event does something to intervene, like Goldberg, let's say. Then Otis comes in, takes the title, moves on from that, and we see maybe a Roman Goldberg without the title. That's what I could see, or maybe Drew and someone else without the title. That's more where I'm leaning if they do decide to do it. And again, he can always lose, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And it's interesting because I think there's only one real person who's going to beat Roman that isn't one of the main guys, and we'll get to it in a little bit. But yeah, so we'll get to that in a little bit. Jeff Hardy takes on Elias. They're continuing this. This got rolled over to another show. So what do you think? Who do you got winning this one? I think it's going to be Elias.
Yeah, he's getting a huge push coming.
Yeah, so Elias wins this one. Bayley defends the SmackDown Women's Championship against Sasha Banks. What a wonderful matchup. What a wonderful way to get to this. Some people have complained a little bit about the last few weeks, but I think all in all, it's been a great storyline. They go and they're in the cell for two women who are huge fans of WWE. I'm sure they're excited to work a match inside that structure. What do you think? How does this work out? Does Sasha get the title with Mandalorian coming out? Does she go away for a little bit? How does this work out? Normally, she might be doing press, but there's no real press to be done. So how does this work out in Hell in a Cell?
Man, dude, you read my mind every time. If this was a normal year, she would lose, get an injured angle, and they'd push it because she'd be doing press. No press. It's all film. So What looks better? Oh, our heavyweight champions on the Mandalorian. I think she wins. I think the fact that we're in a COVID pandemic, the fact that Mandalorian is still coming out, and it is, let's be honest, it's going to be the biggest, probably media-wise, beside the election, like entertainment media-wise, thing this year. Like, I think that's kind of safe to say, right?
Yeah, I think so. Right, at least, yeah, I mean, at this point, I think so.
Yeah, I can't, like, that's going to be the thing people talk about all year is Mandalorian season two. So it makes way more sense, like you said, to have the star on a Fox channel, on a sports channel on Fox, have the heavyweight championship going into anything. So, yeah, I think, hey, look at our champ. Check her out on The Mandalorian every Friday, you know, before you come watch SmackDown. Watch Mandalorian in the morning. And from what it seems like, she's probably going to be a pretty big character.
Yeah, I could see it going down that way, too. The only way I think she loses this and they want to get this to Mania is they have Bayley do something crazy to her. And they do an injury angle, because you can do an injury angle when you have three cell matches on one pay-per-view. And yeah, this one deserves it if it's going to be one that has it. So I'll say Bayley wins and they do an injury angle. But I think most years I'm with you. I'm 100% with you. It could totally be it could totally be Sasha.
I think it's Sasha because I don't think – I think the fans want it. I think – listen, who hasn't been wrestling the last few months?
Yeah.
Becky, yeah. Ronda, Charlotte, like – no offense to Bayley and Sasha. They're going to strike now while it's hot. When we're talking about WrestleManias, we're going to discuss those three females that headlined it the last live one we had. So, you know.
Yeah. And so just to be fun, we'll go ahead and split it to see, just so we have something on the scoreboard. How about we go for the WWE Championship? Drew McIntyre defends the title against Randy Orton. Who do you got?
I mean, Drew McIntyre, right?
But like,
at this point, they keep getting Randy Orton so many chances. I don't know what the hell's going on.
I mean,
I can't predict this. Like, obviously, it has to be Drew. But like, man, like, we've watched wrestling a long time, man. Like, usually they throw someone else in there for a couple of weeks. But no, they're going to keep riding with that. He keeps losing. But all right, let's keep going.
See, I mean, if there's anybody who can beat a guy like Drew McIntyre that Vince is pushing and that has a lot of confidence in, it's obviously Randy Orton. He's one of, like, maybe, what, four guys that could win a match without, you know, really questioning it?
Yes.
But in this case,
on the current roster, Randy Orton, AJ Styles, Daniel Bryan.
And even them, it's a little bit less. Like, it's really Randy Orton, John Cena, Undertaker, Triple H, you know, like, it's...
I wasn't thinking, like, current, still
no, like, even currently, there's not many guys like Seth Rollins, you know? Like, there's not that many guys.
Yeah, okay, Seth Rollins would be one,
Yeah, so I'm gonna go Drew, but, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Randy finally wins one, but no, Drew's gonna win this one.
Yeah, I think it's Drew, too.
Yeah. And into another one, you know, if it wasn't for this rivalry for this storyline, I think Bayley and Sasha might main event, but Roman Reigns defends the Universal Championship against Jey Uso in an I Quit match inside Hell in a Cell, our third Hell in a Cell match. How does this play out?
I mean, obviously Roman wins, but I don't know how it plays out really. Like, I want to see the angle they're going to take here. I would like to see the Tribal Chief have a crew instead of an I Quit, so we'll see.
If there's anybody who's not Goldberg or The Rock that can beat Roman, is Jey Uso, just for the shock value of it, just for, like, the moment of it. I don't think it's going to happen, but this is what I was saying. If there was one person who they've done enough, where they've tricked you enough, they've worked you just enough to say, oh, he might be able to win this one, has been Jey Uso, but obviously I think they're saving Roman for a few different things. They're saving him for either The Rock, but if The Rock can't make it, they're saving him for Goldberg.
And I think the only one that's not done is Big E. And you can tell with the social media push, and now he's doing the rounds, he's winning the Rumble, I think. But I could see him eventually, like, I could see the whole story playing out that Big E has to win the Rumble, gets to Raw with the New Day, and becomes champion and beats McIntyre.
That'd be interesting.
So I'm with you there. I don't think Big E's going to be. I think Roman is a Goldberg or a Rock thing. Yep.
Yeah.
And I don't even think he'd lose to either of them, but that's who his next. That's who his big rivalry is. I don't know who he loses the title to. I really don't at the moment.
Yeah, I can't see it. But he's. I mean, to be honest with you, both, they've booked both Drew and Roman very perfectly. Like, they both shouldn't lose. They both can't kind of lose because they're like, no, they're both good at what they're at right now. So,
yeah, so I think it's Big E winning the Rumble, heads back to Raw with the New Day. I did it by myself. I got here by myself, blah, blah. Kills it.
I got things I got to say about the way they're booking Keith Lee, but I don't have time for that.
Oh, yeah, man. That's not.
And Retribution.
But hey, you know, WWE, it takes a couple years. If you can give them, you know, the first year ain't going to be great. Yeah. So no matter what.
And stop and give my man a push. Don't be cowards with Mustafa Ali. Let's do this already. Those are just
TV
my opinions.
Every week now, yeah. Man. He's got TV time every week now.
One last wrestling topic we'll talk about before we wrap up here on this truncated edition of the Good Brothers. So we've made our predictions of WWE Hell in a Cell. We both have, I guess, Otis winning money and keeping the Money in the Bank. We both have Elias winning. We both split in this match in Hell in a Cell for the SmackDown Women's Championship. The Good Brother has Sasha Banks, the future star of Mandalorian. I have Bayley, who has been on an incredible role. We both have Drew McIntyre defending the WWE Championship in Hell in a Cell, and we both have the Tribal Chief winning in the I Quit match over Jey Uso. So with that, I have one last thing. What are your thoughts of Jericho and MJF?
I didn't like it personally. I didn't enjoy it. I always appreciate taking chances. I do enjoy AEW more than NXT at the moment, but NXT's takeovers are always much better than an AEW pay-per-view. I still think Raw and SmackDown are much better shows than AEW. I think AEW would be third still. I like that they take chances. I like Jericho. I like MJF. I think, you know, they sniff their own shit a little too much for my liking, but I also appreciate being your biggest hype man. I appreciate you being your biggest fan because you should be. That's how you win. And I like that they took a chance. I didn't enjoy the segment, but good on them.
Yeah, 100% agree. I didn't like it. I didn't hate it. At this point, I've seen way dumber things. I've also seen things that were done better with the same type of intentions. So with that, you know, I think it is what it is on that program. I don't like AEW. I like certain things about it, but I think they're kind of just... Especially 2 days ago with one of the guys from the Dark Order, and he looked like he was unconscious. And if I'm completely wrong and that was all part of the gimmick, then they got me. But it looked like he was just knocked out and nobody knew what the hell they were doing. I just think you could tell it's still a young company that's still going through growing pains. So, you know, I don't think people should kill it, but I also don't. This is how I always think. If MJF and Chris Jericho were actually just Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, would we be saying that we liked it as much? Would the internet be saying that, or would they be crushing it and saying, look what they're doing to our favorite stars? So I think that's my biggest issue with AEW. It's not even so much the show, it's kind of the pass that they get.
I don't know, because I feel like when we did Festival of Friendship, that's been very much renowned as an overall positive thing. So I think in that case, like, Jericho gets away with this stuff because Jericho does a good job of making fun of himself. Mm-hmm. So I did enjoy the Kevin Owens stuff, and this kind of reminds me of that, where most of it will hit and most of it does hit. I like when they do the argument, but they're actually complimenting each other. I enjoy that stuff.
Yeah.
I just didn't enjoy this one section. I still think them two together is awesome.
Yeah, so I agree.
Like you said, it reminds me of Kevin Owens and Jericho when they were the best friends.
Absolutely. But Good Brother, that is it. We are done with this episode of The Good Brothers. Thank you so much for taking some time for us. Thank you, everybody, for joining us super late. We hope you guys have a wonderful weekend. Good Brother, I hope you have a wonderful weekend as well, except for fantasy football. May your team suffer a devastating loss to your older brother's hands. Follow The Good Brother on Twitter at Mercado21Alex. I'm on Twitter at MikeMedia, and the show is on Twitter at Good Brothers Pod. Good Brother, any last words?
Last words.
For the Good Brother himself, Alex Mercado.
Adios.
I'm the Good Brother, Mike Mercado. We'll see you in the next episode of The Good Brothers here on the Mercado Airwaves Network.
Thanks for joining us here on The Good Brothers here on Mercado Airwaves.